Using Meditation to Unlock My Inner Wisdom. Lecture 8. Paper and pencil in hand, infinite wisdom in me eagerly awaits my attention to reveal all knowledge in me, through me, as I peacefully listen and am prepared to write down reminders of awareness. Lecture 8. Paper and pencil in hand, infinite wisdom in me eagerly awaits my attention to reveal all knowledge in me, through me, as I peacefully listen and am prepared to write down reminders of awareness. We constantly have illumination. We constantly have ideas that come to us and sparkle our mind and make us feel, hey, yeah, oh my goodness, yes, and we don't write it down. And then later, we want to do it. Now, I know for myself, this is a very foolish thing, and I shouldn't tell you. It's a very foolish thing. Very foolish thing that I do. In the middle of the night, I wake up with a great idea for a thought for today. And I say, gee, that's so great, I'll remember it. And then I wake up in the morning, I thought, what was that great thought I wanted to remember this morning, you know? And I didn't remember. And I feel so stupid for not writing it down because it was good, you know? And sometimes there's two or three of them. And, you know, coming up with thoughts for today that are significant and worthwhile, it takes a little bit of consideration. So I say to myself, every time I have a beautiful illumination in the middle of the night or any time, immediately stop. Write it down. Now, I have taken it and put it on my record player here, you know, on my recorder, but that's not the same thing. It's not the same thing because on the recorder, you mix it up with all sorts of other things. Sometimes you look at it, sometimes you don't, and it's not reliable. But a piece of paper. Now, here I have this idea. I think that the three-hour meditation is a good idea. I've thought that for years, but I haven't been doing it recently. I just do it when I come to the seminars. And I get a little froggy voice when I do it, and I shouldn't do that. So I have decided, now I'm not going to tell anybody else this. but I'm going to set up my three-hour meditation spot in my room. I got two beautiful little white chairs in there. I'm going to take them back into the oasis and put them back into the main bedroom there. And then I'm going to take the big blue cushions, you know, the big blue cushions. We got a bunch of them. I'm going to set them up in my embassy, in my hermitage, for a place to sit down in the morning and do the three-hour meditation myself. And then I'm going to set that all up, and I made little notes here on what I want to do and how I want to do it and how I want to do the three-hour meditation and really do it for myself, not record it, you know, just do it for myself and have a lot of fun with it. And so I thought, what the heck, why not? So now I made a note, and I made it on a separate sheet of paper here that's going to be separate, and it's going to come out when I get home, and I'm going to look it over, the notes, and actually see it, and so it'll be done. Now, I think that's a good idea. I think it's a worthwhile idea. I haven't done it for a while, and every time I have done it, I felt just sky high, just accomplishing great, wonderful things. So I'm going to do that now. Okay. It's a reminder to us. When we have what we think are great ideas, and they may not really be great ideas, but they may be great ideas, so we write them down. And then that gives you a second chance to look at them. And then you might have shuffled with your other notes and they come up again. And so, but you have written down why you wanted to do it, how you were going to do it, and so forth. Now, that's not terribly important, but it's an inspiration that you got. And that inspiration didn't happen to you for chance. It didn't happen to you by accident. It didn't happen to me by accident. It didn't come into my mind as an accident. I would like to continue giving three-hour meditations wherever I go, but I'd like to have a voice to give it with, you know, not to be all croaky. And when I'm giving my lectures, oftentimes, I'm not croaky. I have a nice sounding voice, and sometimes I don't. Now, why is that? That's not proper. It's not right. That's I'm not nervous. I'm not upset. It's just that the old larynx says, relax a little bit. Well, it doesn't have to do that. It doesn't have to do that. It's true. I do more talking than anybody else here, and I'm on deck to talk more than anybody else. And so, but it just should not do that. It didn't do it years ago, and it shouldn't do it now. You know, there's no reason for it. And so I'm going to work on that, and that's going to be a treatment, and we'll see how it works out, you know. And I think that it's a very good and noble idea. And so I'm working. I'm listening to my inner voice. I'm listening when my illumination comes to me. When it comes to me, oftentimes I'm walking the path, and I've only got the telephone with me. But on the telephone, I have a little recorder, too. And so I record it on the telephone. And sometimes I look at it, sometimes I don't. But when I look at it later, as I see, I wonder why I put that on there. Oh, yeah, that was a good idea, you know, and it comes back again. But the thing is, always have something to write it down or something to take it. And when I'm walking my meditation path, I'm naked, and so I don't have anything perhaps but the telephone and the leash of the dog, you know. And so I take the telephone and I record on there whatever things I want to do. And it's just wonderful. But I do that because that time of morning is the most beautiful time of the day. It's not so hot out, and you don't have to worry about getting a sunburn or anything else like that. But you get plenty of vitamin D, and you just feel wonderful. I feel fantastic. And then I come home, and I go about my business. If I go out later in the day, then the sun gets so blistering hot that Rex doesn't want to take a walk. He doesn't want to walk if it's after 10 o'clock. Because the dirt is so hot, and everything else is so hot. He comes home, what's the first thing he does?
Puts his leg in the water.
He leaps into the fish pond, and he stands there or sits there in the fish pond for about 10 minutes, cooling off. And that's not fair to him. So I take him out early with me, and the sun is just coming up, and it's just beautiful. But the thing is, that's when I get my greatest inspirations. Because I'm just absolutely free. I'm absolutely, totally being myself, just having the greatest time of my life. And nobody's around. There's border patrol show up occasionally, but that's their problem. That's my land. And if they come on my land and they find me walking my dog in the morning, then they better watch out, you know. But and they do. So we have the opportunity of having inspirational ideas come into our consciousness very often. And all of you are lying to me, and you're 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 lying to me. You keep lying to me, and I keep lying to myself too, but you keep lying to me when you say you would like to be independently wealthy. You'd like to have perfect health. You'd like to live an ideal body and an ideal mind. And you're lying. You're actually lying. Because if you really want to do that, then you would meditate now and then, and you would take the inspiration that comes in your meditation, telling you what to do, telling you how to have independent wealth, telling you how to live in an ideal body. Because it does. Your inner self is the allness of the universe with the total information of the universe, the total awareness of the universe, and it knows how to give you a healthy body. It knows how to give you a healthy mind. It knows how to give you abundance and stuff, how to tune into this here. So I came home the other day, and I said, okay, girls, I got a new one now. And they said, oh, goody. And I said, what did I say? I said, we are showered by independent wealth or something like that. If I don't see my note, I don't say it right, but I've got it written down. Have you got it?
Yeah. Everyone showers
me. Everyone showers me.
Everyone showers money on
the uni. Now, the uni and me are the same thing. So if they shower it on the uni, they shower it on me too. But everyone showers money on the uni. on the University of Healing. Everybody showers money on it. Now, isn't that a nice, easy way?
Yes.
And that's the thing. Everyone showers money on the uni. Like, all the students like to pay for their tuition in full right away, you know, and buy for the whole season. Everybody likes to send us their offerings. Everyone likes to bless the University of Healing, and everyone likes to send in offerings for the prayer ministry that we do. We work with people on the television, and we work with people on the internet, on the telephone, dial healing words, and so forth. And people call up, and the same persons call up again and again and again. How wonderful, you know? But they're getting some good out of it. And I don't know about this guy here. This guy right here. Okay. He's sitting here listening to this lecture, listening to my talk. And then I hear him talk to you. And I hear him say to you, and you know, I try to get Herb on the internet all the time. I try to listen to all of his talks for today. Sometimes I can't get him, but I like to listen to all of his talks for today. And, well, how about that? Isn't that nice, you know? And I don't even know half the people who are listening to me on the internet, you know? And that's a very gratifying thing, then, that all of my choice and effort to put it on the internet every day is worth it. But it takes a few minutes. First, I have to get a topic, and that takes a moment or two. Then I sit down, and I start making my talk. And I'm in the middle of my talk, and some lovely person calls up asking for healing. And they ring on the telephone right in the middle of my talk. And I got to stop. And so I talk to them. And then I go back. Well, I got to start the talk over again. Because, you know, you don't have the same rhythm. And so I start sometimes two and three times. And then there goes, you know, like maybe an hour and a half, 2 hours. And then after I got that done, then I have to prepare it to put it onto the internet. I have to upload it and download it, and I have to overload it, and I have to get it all ready into the internet thing. And that's good. I'm not complaining. But I'm just saying, your day is shot. When you, my morning is already over by the time it begins because I'm doing all these little goodies. But I love doing it. It is a satisfying thing when he tells me he likes to listen to it. You know, otherwise I think, who am I doing this for? Just for me? For you? Oh, you listen too? You listen too?
And her.
And her? Well, great. Then it's well worthwhile. And your mom. Mm-hmm. It's well worthwhile. But you see, that's inspirational. That's inspirational. And then I am walking the path and, oh, hey, talk about this, talk about this, talk about this. I got to have something to write this stuff down on, you know, to make notes of all these beautiful things, because that's the blessing of the university. That's the blessing of our program. When I was in the beginning, back in the 70s for the University of Healing here, I would go out of my house at the Valley of the Seven Mountains, and I would go off into the hills, into the valleys there. Nobody around. We owned 200 acres there. It's a big, really beautiful, big place. And I'd go there, and I'd have a deck chair, you know, one of these lawn chairs sitting out there, and I'd have a little lawn bench. And I'd bring my recorder, big old box that I had a record on in the 70s. And I would sit there and I'd say, okay, I've got to make the required listening tapes. And I've got to make the required listening tapes for each course and do this and do this. And so then I'd say, okay, this one, I write down the titles, Prosperity or whatever, you know. And then I'd sit there and I'd give these talks. And that's the same one you're listening to today. But it was just inspirational, absolutely inspirational, and absolutely 45 minutes. Each one had to be 45 minutes, because more than that, it was too much. Less than that, it didn't feel what I wanted to do. And it total inspirational. And I just listened to the divine within. I just listened and followed everything that came to me. I did that for years. I wrote my books like that. I'd go out into the hills, and I'd be gone early in the morning, and then I'd write my first chapter, or write a chapter. And then I'd come back, and I'd read it to the gang, whoever was there at the monastery at the time. And I'd read it to them. And at first, it was just my son Mark. And my son Mark is a very tough guy, a tough audience. He says to me, can you imagine your son saying this to you? He says, Dad, is that what you want to say? You know, is what I've just written what I want to say? Well, I had just come out of religious science, and I just come out of unity, and I just come out of all that way of looking things, which were just a little different from what I was into. And so it wasn't. It wasn't what I wanted to say, so I had to discard that beautiful article that I wrote, that beautiful chapter that I wrote, and go and write it again. But I was glad for him, because he was my conscience. And he listened to me, and he guided me, and I listened, and I followed it. And I never was unhappy. The fact that he was so persuasive and so aware of what I was trying to do, that he led me into the right path, made all the difference in the world. So that's where the art and science of wholeness came from, Mark, and from Cecilia and the others. they heard the chapters, and they would all comment on it. And of course, when we got over to our present property, I was writing stuff for the
Song of the Spirit. Hmm? Song of the Spirit.
No, that was all done. No, I was into the absolute philosophy stuff.
Okay.
You know, and that's heavy duty. So I wrote the first book, and it was easy as pie, because it was comparing absolute to the relative. And then this next one was trying to just stick with the absolute. And that was tough, but I did it. And then the next one, which is the doctorate manual, that was living only in absolute in every area of your thinking. And I've got it about two-thirds done, but it's been two-thirds done for a number of years because I haven't gone back to it. But if you don't have inspiration to do the work that you're doing, especially if you're doing inspirational work, you are just up a tree. You're up a creek without a paddle, and it's a tough experience. So this is why learning here to understand and listen when the inspiration touches you and follow it and do what it says. Because, you know, you've all had inspirations where it said, turn left here, and you say, well, I don't want to turn left. But something inside you says, turn left. And so you don't turn left because you're not going to turn left because of some reason you don't know. And you get up, and then all of a sudden you find the detour. And you're out of business. You got to go back, or you got to go forward and then come back. So either way, you did not listen, and you should have. And this is what we want to learn to do. We want to learn to listen and learn to follow. Now we said here, paper and pencil in hand, infinite wisdom in me eagerly waits my attention to reveal all knowledge in me through me as I peacefully listen and am prepared to write down reminders of awareness. So I want to write down these reminders of awareness that come to me in all of these odd times and all the odd hours and these odd experiences, because it is so wonderful. It is so wonderful. And when you write it down and then you follow it, it's just great. It's just great. I have had so many people come to me and say things about the various articles that appeared in the Gist and the various chapters of the book and stuff like that in the master's course and doctorate course. You haven't come to that yet. But in the doctor's course, what's the first chapter they read in the doctor's in Illuminations?
Master Handbook of the Illumination Handbook of
Master. In the Illumination book, what's the first chapter they read? Come on, you know. Come on.
It's, what is it now?
Three-word letter word. Three-letter word. Huh?
I am peace.
God, I am.
Sex.
Is it?
That's not
the chapter
first
on sex.
That's not the first.
N-O-W.
That's chapter 11.
What is the first chapter people read?
Oh, read.
They look in the index.
Yeah.
And then they find the chapter on sex. Oh, what you got to say about sex? Ah. And the master's bitch, you know.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good. But what has he got to say about sex in the master's bit?
Okay.
And they read it, and they say, oh, Yeah. You know, it's not that they're against it or for it, but the thing is, that's they're driven by that. They're still on the human elemental level. But it's good. It's good. So, I work with them, and I work with everybody on all levels, and I make no judgments about what they do. And people say to me, you know, well, I want to have many wives. I'm a Muslim. I said, go for it. Whatever your teaching is, whatever your belief is. But why? Why do you want a wife in the first place? Why do you want a wife? Do you want to have kids? Well, that comes along with it. You know, don't you want to have kids? Well, if they come, we got them. If not, we don't, you know. Well, why do you want many wives?
Yes.
Well, you want a lot of sex? Well, that's not really the thing. One wife and you, in an ideal situation, should cover that that requirement very well, if you are really doing it right. What's right about sex? The foreplay and the afterplay. The sex act itself is like nothing. It's gone in an instant, and it's what you've said before, what you've done before, how you touched each other, how you've been sensitive to each other, and afterwards how you've been sensitive to each other. That's what makes up real sexual relationship in marriage. And if you haven't got that, if you're just in there and whiz-bang and you're done, and then there's nothing. There's nothing, and sex becomes just a simple, dumb thing, you know. And you don't want it to be that. You want it to be something beautiful, something significant, something that comes like this. Because when this result comes about from your relationship, everything makes sense in your life. Everything makes sense in your world. And if this doesn't come about, then poof, people separate. It's a shame. But what is it that we want in life? What is it we want? How do we want to be inspired? Many writers have written about the strange things that children say, the humorous things that children say, the inspirational things that children say. And one of my students from back in 1970, she's still writing to me. She's still a very good close friend, Mary Willett. She sends me the latest on everything. And she just sent me about how, you probably have seen it perhaps, but it's on the internet, and it's how puppies and their masters look alike. And the masters are this size masters. And it's the little puppies that look like it's girl, the little girl, and they're just beautiful. And you know, such lovely things that come through are beautiful. I worked with this lady and her son who was growing up. He was a teenager at the time I had him at the church in Minneapolis. And he just turned out to be a super, super, super person and a super father with the most beautiful wife you could ever want to see, you know, and glorious. I don't think he was fair, but he had all girls. He had three beautiful girls. But just imagine if he had a boy. He was a handsome guy. They would have had a really handsome boy, really fantastic. But their girls are great, and their family is great, and Mary is just great. And see, these are the things that happen to you. You plant seeds, and you plant good seeds, and you don't vary from those seeds. And what happens? Good trees come your way, and good results come your way, and the whole world says, yes, I love you. Yes, it is good. Yes, it is wonderful. Now, we've been talking about the idea that we'd like to have our ideal body, our ideal mind, our ideal everything. And we'd like to be independently wealthy. And we'd like to have all sorts of lovely things in our life, and we'd like to have them right now. Now, what are we going to do about it? What are we going to do? Are we going to take these inspirational ideas that come to us and just ignore them and say, poof, you know, that's not important? Or are we going to listen to them and say, if Einstein hadn't followed through, and the law relativity, the principle of relativity, if he hadn't written it down in the middle of the night, And then he woke up in the morning and didn't understand it. Well, what's going on there? I mean, that's crazy. But later, he understood it. Because when he first, you know, E equals MC squared. You know that one? E equals MC squared. The law of matter. Now, he looked at it after he woke up from his dream. Before he went to sleep, he'd been working on the project. He'd been working on it for weeks and weeks and weeks, and nothing happened. And then somebody said he prayed. I don't know what he prayed or not, but he's a good Jewish guy. And so he said, okay, the law of relativity, the principle of relativity. And he wrote it down. And then he studied it through. Yes, oh yes, very good. And like we have in this magazine article here, it says, this guy, we have been given inspiration on so many beautiful ideas and concepts, so many great, wonderful, workable, usable ideas. And we take credit for them because we announced them to the world, where we were only aware of them through our inspiration. And we're the ones that brought them forth. It's true, but like Einstein, he got the theory of relativity after searching for it, and he didn't even recognize it when he got it. And it's not a bad or stupid man for not recognizing it, but it just goes to show that we are always given things that we search for, and we don't always understand what it is that we're given, and we don't always understand how to use what we're given and how to apply it. Which is kind of a sad and strange thing, but it's a wonderful thing. How do we begin to listen and listen within and write down what is told to us and how we can take that inspiration and do something? We don't want to be an Einstein insofar as he didn't know what inspiration he got when he got it. Madame Curie had the same problem. She was searching out all sorts of interesting substances, and she left the pot over in the stove overnight. And it slow simmered overnight, and in the process transformed the radiation chemical of radium that we know today. But we wouldn't have known it if she hadn't let that happen by accident. By accident? She was smart enough in a controlled situation to know what was happening. And of course, chemistry was her field. And she became world famous because of it. And she and her husband continued doing things with that field and doing great stuff. But you see, we're given these things. We're given these things. But are we prepared to handle it? Are we prepared to do something with it? My son builds ultralight airplanes, and he does a great job in doing it. And when we were in the EAA, the Experimental Aircraft Association, while he was a young man and growing up in this stuff, he came up with a lot of ideas on hydraulics for his airplanes and stuff like that, but he couldn't use hydraulics on his airplane. His airplane was too light. There was no room. He put the hydraulic system on there, it'd be twice the weight of what his airplane is. And his ultralight airplane was the whole theme, what he had, but the ideas came to him. And so he brought those ideas to the Experimental Aircraft Association club meeting on every Thursday night, I think that it was. And at the meeting, the big McConnell Douglas and big aircraft companies were all around us, and their people in their aircraft design department were always looking for new designs. So they were attending the EAA meetings and listening to these bright young minds and what they were coming up with. Well, Mark came up with his, and he told them all about it and how it worked and how it did. And they went out and put it on their airplanes. And naturally, nothing came to Mark because he didn't expect it. And he was asked, he said, do you like it when those guys steal your stuff? He said, well, they're not really stealing it. He said, I just thought about it, and I wasn't going to do anything with it. And since I wasn't going to do anything with it, it's nice that they did. And all his life, he would never have done it. But what's he doing now? Now he's doing 3D on his design work on creating his airplanes, which is far superior to anything McConnell Douglas did back in the 50s. But that's what we're doing today. That's the magic, the miracles that are happening today. And Mark has on his staff a NASA scientist who worked for NASA for years as a scientist on their aircraft development programs. And so he's developing some new programs with Mark, and they're coming up with some great ideas now. Who would have ever guessed? Who would have ever guessed? Mark is just a free thinker, a free doer, and he does whatever his heart tells him to do, and he does it because it makes him happy, and that's the smartest thing in the world. Now, you look at somebody else, and you look at Ugo, and you see Ugo, and you see Ugo, and he is a good doctor, and he's doing his doctor thing, and then all of a sudden he gets an inspiration to go into psychology. He gets the inspiration to go into psychiatry. He gets the inspiration to go in and go for advanced degrees in it, and he stays at his aunt's house and does work in his advanced degrees. And he had the inspiration to do it, but he had to carry through, to follow through, and study and do it, because he could have just thought about it and done nothing about it, and he would never have achieved his goals. And today as
he actually did. He thought for some time and he didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, you?
No, I mean Hugo. He thought about it, but he didn't.
Yeah.
Before he actually applied it, when he was in Nigeria.
Oh, that's beautiful, isn't it?
Yeah.
But you see, he did it. And that's the beautiful thing of it. Many of us have inspirations ourselves, and we don't follow through. We say, yeah, I'd like to be a doctor, I'd like to be a psychiatrist, I'd like to be this or that, I'd like to be a designer. And you have a talent for designing, but you don't ever do it. You have to have the makeup of a man like Ugo to carry through and do it and be it. And of course, what happened to him? He probably found the most beautiful woman in the world and married her. And now they're having wonderful children. Now, what sort of a family is he going to have? What sort of a life is he going to live? He's going to live one in harmony and peace and joy. He's going to live one as all he is. And I'm not saying this just to toot his horn. He's done that by himself already. I'm saying we can do it too. We can do that because we can get out there and get busy and live our life in a beautiful way if we want to. Or not. Yeah, we're also amused by what other people do, and that Einstein he forgot to wear his pants to work one day, you know, and things like that. And we say, isn't that silly? That's not the man. That's not the thing. What's going on in that man's mind? What's going on? He was not doing anything bad. He was just being forgetful. But what's going on in his brain? The beauty of the magic of the man. Now, Sybil, what's going on in your brain? What's going on in your brain for you? Why did you bother going through all these courses and do them so diligently and so dedicatedly and bring such good to yourself? Why did you do it? And why did you develop this organization there in Nigeria? And why did you... And then you come to a point where you are ready to go beyond. You're ready to express on some other level. That doesn't mean you abandon the base. That just means that you are looking at higher standards for yourself. And that's great. That's great. And Chrissy, she's going to continue to be an outstanding nurse, an outstanding supervisor in her nursing program here for as long as she lives. Or until the day she decides, hey, I got other talents too. I think I'll look into them, you know, and trust herself. But I've got a stable job. I've got a stable income. I've got a nice situation here. No, you don't. A janitor. The janitor works when he has to work. And anyone can do his job. You are somebody that nobody could do the job that you can do. And you will only have the good in your life when you claim it. When you go to your supervisors and your people and you go with such Nigerian modesty, rotten modesty at that, and so they think they can walk all over you. They can take your talent and they can use it, and they don't have to pay you for it. They can just give you hours that just would beat up a normal person, but because you're so dedicated, it doesn't touch you. But you're good. You're good. But do you believe in yourself? Do you believe in how good you are? Can you go up to your employer and can you say to them, look, I'm ready for a different situation. All I'm doing is being a scrub woman because I'm putting in all these extra hours to do the things that we should have other people doing, and that's not mine. And they say, well, don't you realize we're in a recession? Don't you realize we're this and that? They will not say that to you unless you have it in your mind. Yeah. Now, you going to have it in your mind?
Yes.
No. You're not going to have the recession. You're listening to the wrong part of my talk. You're good. You're good. But nobody knows you're good because you do the work of three or four people. And they just think that they can use you. And they can, because you don't know that how good you are. I'm not trying to mess you up with your boss, but I'm trying to mess you up with yourself. Because you have a low opinion of yourself. And that's not true. You've got talent. You've got ability. You can do anything. But you go around acting as though you're so, oh, yes, may I please help you? May I do this? Milk toast. You don't want to do that. I say. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
I'm not saying these things to run you down, by God.
No.
I'm saying these things to run you up, to get you going, because you're good. You're good. And this little monkey shine here, he is one of the geniuses of this world. He is more magical than 1,000 other youngsters. But he has one fault, and that fault is he's discourteous to himself. He's disrespectful to himself. And he's disrespectful to himself when he goes around trying to control the world by his presence. Now, all he has to do is control the world by his mind. He has a great mind. And all he has to do is be master of his own mind, and he will have the whole world at his footsteps, at his doorstep, because he's good. But you let him go around pretending he's 8 years old, you know. You let him pretend he's 8 years old. He is 25 years old, right? Yes, you are. What are you? How old are you? You tell me.
Seven.
He's 7 3/4, or 7 9/10.
He's 8.
Because in a couple days, in a couple days you're going to be 8, aren't you?
14.
Sunday.
You're 8. Yeah, you're talking about 7.
But do you know what I'm saying, Ibube? Do you know what I'm saying about you? You are a genius, and a genius is always respectful of himself and everybody else. And that's what I see you being all the time. You see, this Agabo group here, and whatever your last name, how do you pronounce it? You.
I'm not Agabo.
Huh?
I'm not Agabo.
I said, how do you pronounce your last name?
Agwebu.
Yes. All right, Agwebu. Yes. Now, I'm not being funny with that. Yes. I'm just saying Agabo and Agwebu. I'm just saying, if you would listen to me instead of wool gathering on feeling sorry for yourself, you would come up with the right answer. I was trying to say your name, and you kept giving me the name I was already knowing, you know. Now, what is she? Is she an Agabo or a Gwebu?
Agabo.
She is an Agabo.
An Agabo.
Huh?
Agabo,
yes. Agabo, all right. She is an Agabo. Well, she's an Agabo also, but she's an Agwebu. She is now living herself. She's not living her husband's life any longer. She's not living the life of the married family. She could never be an Agabo. She could marry an Agabo and take the name by the law and stuff like that, but in her is always the Agwebu, right? In you is always the Agwebu. And how do you pronounce your last name?
Ikeabo.
Hmm?
Ikeabo.
The same?
Ikeabo.
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 Yeah.
Ikeabo.
All right, now. Are you your wife's name?
Nope.
No, your own name. Was your wife ever your name? She had your name by marriage, but she was always herself. She was always the beautiful, fantastic being she was. And we need to remember that we carry our own lineage, not the lineage that we marry into or don't marry into or whatever. That is just a little extra pudding on the cake. But the reality of who we are is who we have grown up to be. Why did Sam marry you? He married you because you were an Ugwebu. Ugwebu?
Yes.
He married you because you were an Ugwebu, because you were a woman of substantial confidence in yourself and belief in yourself and talent in yourself. You were a master of yourself in every way. You didn't need him, and he didn't need you, but you enjoyed each other. Right?
Yes.
Yes, I'm so happy you agree with me. But that's the truth. Now, you see, you listen to your own magic. You listened all your life to your own magic. And it's only in your later years when you got married that you listened to him sometimes. But listening to him didn't satisfy you because he loved politics and you could care less about politics. You got involved in it, but you care less. You understand?
Yes.
Okay. Now, what did you care about? You cared about people. You cared about making life richer and better and fuller for all the people you loved. Not only the people of Nigeria, but the people of the world. That's who you are. And that's why you've come up here in England. That's why you have such free passports to come to England and go around the world as you like. That's a great thing. You're a free and wonderful woman to do all the things you want to do. But these are done only because you followed your inner inspiration. When you follow your inner inspiration, great things happen to you. Now, you ask me for inspiration sometimes, Chrissy. Do you ever follow any that I give you?
Yes, I do. It works.
Thank you. Yes, I do, and it works. Okay. I'm glad to hear that. I don't need to hear that, because I talk to you because I love you, not because I want to help you. I don't see you needing help. Sybil, what do?
It's done already. It's
no,
done.
Sybil is her name. And I said, Sybil, what do I do? And then you answered. Now, Sybil, what do? You look...
Beyond.
What?
Beyond to the original
purity. You look beyond to her original purity and integrity. Right. Great. Now, you're not looking beyond something. You're looking beyond to her original purity and integrity. And drawing that forth into reality in her life. Now, what did you want to say?
Dog.
You agree. But stand up for yourself. Even when I pull your leg and I press your buttons here, just stand up, you know. Because I'm not meaning to do any damage. I'm only meaning to do good stuff.
I know.
Okay, okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So, that's what we're doing. Now, how are we doing on our question here, or on our statement? Write it down. I see okay writing down here, and I see all of you writing down here. Do you write down your inspirations too?
Yes, sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes. All the time is neat. Yeah. But of course, if you're like some people are, they're living a total life of inspiration. You'd be on your pen and paper all the time. But what's the next step of writing it down?
Follow it through.
See, you all come up with the same response. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great and true. You follow through on it. Are you going to be like Einstein and not know what it is you followed through to?
No.
That can happen, you know. You can. I wonder why I feel that I should go talk to this person. I wonder why I feel like Chrissy here. She walks in the office, and as she walks into her hospital, she's in the front hall, or wherever your parking area is, and she walks in the door, and there's a man sitting there, and a pleasant-looking man, and she says to the man, "Sir, has anyone helped you? May I do anything for you?" He says, "Oh, no, I have an appointment with somebody, you know, and it's one of the bigwigs." And you say, "Well, he doesn't come in until 10, and it's now, you know, 9:30. Do you have a place where you can sit and wait? You know, can I take you to his outer office and wait for him there?" "Well, that's very kind of you." And so then you take him there. And as you're walking there, he says, "How do you like working in this hospital?" And you say, "Well, I have so many talents that I'd like to give to the hospital, but you can only do the things that you're asked to do in the area that you're asked to do it. And I am blah, 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 and I'm doing this in the hospital, and I'm loving every minute of it, but I just want to do so much more." And he says, "Well, that's very good. They're fortunate to have you." And so then he goes his way, and he got your name too, by the way. He goes his way, and you go your way. And then next thing you know, your boss calls you in his office, and he says, "Sister Cressy," whatever he calls you, he says, "What would you think if I asked you to change jobs?" And you'd say, "Whatever you say, sir, I'm ready. Whatever you think I'm ready for, I'm ready. I'll do it. I'm going to put you in charge of this here situation, and we're going to double your salary," and so forth like that. "Now, can you handle that?" "Oh, yes, very well, you know." And so, and he says, "And we're giving you an office." I've always been trying to get her an office. But he'll give you an office and set you up. And so then what happens? You were gentle, kind, and courteous to a nobody, to somebody sitting out there who could have been absolutely nobody. That's why he is so great, because he can play that role and be somebody. And you were courteous, and you did not belittle the organization. You did not say that you were not living up to your potential. All you said was, "There's so much more you'd like to do," you see? Now, the door is open for you. You don't know where that next person is going to turn the handle for you and turn it for you beautifully. But the thing, you've got to start liking yourself. Be outgoing. I guess that's the word for it. Be outgoing. And as you are outgoing in a loving manner, it comes to you. You have the capacity to be outgoing. You know that. You've done it often, but not enough. You want to do it even more, I'd say. But I'm not you. You're you. And that's the wonderful thing of this world. If I were you, the world wouldn't like it as much as if you're you. So, now, are there any questions on anything that we've said here?
From me.
No comment?
No.
We've got a good start there, haven't we? Very good start. Oh, yeah. That's better.
Dry.
I should get some wet drops in my eyes. Hmm?
Is it dry? Your eyes are dry.
My eyes are dry, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You have to focus like this. Leave it, then it wets your eye. You don't blink.
Oh, I don't blink?
I leave it like that.
I'm always staring.
Then you're watery.
I'll sit here and blink. And you know when I'm... I feel silly doing it, you know. But you're right. I should blink my eyes a little more often.
So if you do like that,
yeah, I'm concentrating very seriously, and I love it. Okay, now, anybody else have any questions?
No.
We've come to the end of our lecture series on this. No one? Okay. Then we'll take our pause now, and we'll come back for our question period. And if you wish, we'll just have an additional lecture there. So whatever you're ready for, I'm ready for. Okay. I love you.
I love you.
I love you.